And I've carried that analysis forward as I've written about this issue since, because then what the issue really is for me as I stepped away from that conversation is, then how do we find partners in the Arab Muslim world who will join us in branding this as shameful? What policies do we need to undertake to make them our partners? What policies do they need to undertake? Because at the end of the day, only they know the difference between people in their culture, and only they can stop it. So that is kind of the overarching analysis with which I approach this issue. So then let's break it down. Let's first look at what is the problem? Where do these boys of 9/11 come from? And then how does one begin to shape a different context where they might be deemed illegitimate? And again, this is the framework with which I approached the war. It had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction. It had everything to do with people of mass destruction. Now, I believe to understand 9/11, you have to understand that the hijackers on that flight, those flights, the 19 hijackers, actually there were two groups of hijackers there. One group I call the sitting around guys, and the other group I call the Europeans. Now let's look at each group, because they are actually two distinctly different groups of people. The sitting around guys were the mostly the Saudis. They were the guys in the back of the plane. They were brought into the plot late in the game, as bin Laden has told us. And their job was to restrain the passengers. I call them the sitting around guys because they come from a vast pool of young men in Saudi Arabia in particular who are just sitting around. Go to Jeddah on a Thursday night and you'll see them by the hundreds driving up and down the corniche of Jeddah. They're sitting around basically because they have either not been educated to get any kind of decent job because of the education system in Saudi Arabia, or there are just no jobs there to be had. Now, where do these sitting around guys come from? They come from what I like to call the wheel of bin Laden. The wheel of bin Laden is like a giant cement mixer that churns out sitting around people. Unemployment in Saudi Arabia is about 40%, so we're talking about a lot of sitting around people. But that really is true from Morocco all the way across the Arab world. The wheel of bin Laden is made up of three spokes. The first is autocratic, dictatorial regimes. There are 22 states in the Arab League. Not a single one has a government elected in a free and fair election. There is no region in the world, not sub-Saharan Africa, not Central Asia, not South America, not Eastern Europe, where you could have a regional summit and not one single leader present has been elected in a free and fair election. That's the beginning of the problem. The second, and that leads to the second spoke in the wheel of bin Laden, and that is anti-modernist religious educators and spiritual leaders. Basically, what you have is a transaction. You have deeply illegitimate regimes ruling without any real consent of the ruled. And so to buy legitimacy, they basically engage in a transaction which is most starkly apparent in Saudi Arabia, where the regime basically blesses and anoints a anti-modernist religious establishment. The anti-modernists bless the regime, and the regime blesses the anti-modernists with state title, support, and funds. Well, what that produces is generation after generation of a retarded education system that only manufactures sitting around young men and young women. Not that they care about the young women certainly in Saudi Arabia. Now, the best place you can see this analyzed is in the Arab Human Development Report produced by the United Nations Development Program by 30 courageous Arab intellectuals, social scientists, and economists, who sat back and asked themselves a really tough series of questions. And they did a remarkable job. Some of them had to remain anonymous, but these people were real pioneers. They asked themselves a simple question. How is it that the 22 states of the Arab League do not have a combined GDP equal to one country, Spain. The GDP of the 22 Arab states does not equal that of Spain. How could it be, they said, that 60% of adult women in the Arab world are illiterate today? How could it be that 25% of all our college grads leave the area as soon as they graduate? How could it be that between the year 1980 and 2000, the entire Arab world combined filed 270 international patents for new inventions? And in that same 20-year period, South Korea alone filed 16,824. How could it be that last year Greece translated five times as many books from English to Greek, one country, as the entire Arab world translated from English to Arabic? This region, the authors of this report concluded, is in the grip of a human development disaster. A human development disaster that is producing sitting around people by the thousands, sitting around people who are angry, frustrated, and humiliated at the fact that they cannot achieve their full potential. And that's where half those hijackers came from. That was the pool bin Laden drew upon. But I said there was another group on the plane. Another group, the other group was called the Europeans. Why do I call them the Europeans? Now, these are actually the key plotters. Mohammed Atta, Shekhechi, Jarrah, the key plotters of 9/11. I call them the Europeans because there's something really interesting that struck me right away from their biographies. And that was that not a single one of these young men left home a Muslim radical. Every single one of them was radicalized in Europe. Every single one of them became a radical, not at home, but in Europe. Now, what is this about? I think it's about two things, basically. One is the fact that we as a country aspire to be a melting pot. We don't always do it as perfectly as we claim, as perfectly as we could, but we certainly aspire to do it, and I need only look around this room to see that. Europe does not aspire to be a melting pot. Europe actually aspires not to be a melting pot in way too many countries. And what you have today in Europe is the third generation of Arab and Muslim immigrants. Their parents came to help rebuild Europe after World War II. We now have the third generation, and many of them, particularly the young men, have neither been absorbed nor given the education they need to be employed. They gather in prayer groups for warmth and solidarity, as immigrants do all over the world. Some gravitate to more radical prayer groups, and some gravitated all the way to Saudi Arabia. The 9/11 report has a very good description of all of this. So that's where part of this kind of angst comes from. There's, I believe, another larger meta explanation. And it has to do with the fact that this is the relationship, I would argue, between ideology, sort of politics, and religion. These young men are raised with the view of Islam, and this is in no way a criticism of Islam, this is Islam's self-identity, that Islam is the most complete and perfect expression of God's monotheistic message, that the Quran is God's last and most perfect revelation, and that the Prophet Muhammad is the seal of the prophets. He's God's last and most perfect messenger. If I were to put it in computer terms for Yahoo, they're raised with the view that Islam is God 3.0. They're raised with the view that Christianity is God 2.0, that Judaism is God 1.0, and Hinduism is God 0.0. Okay? I believe that the cognitive dissonance that sparks the kind of rage that produces people to take part in 9/11 comes from the following interaction. These young men, and it happens in Europe, because every day in Europe they wake up and are confronted with the stark reality that God 2.0 and God 1.0 and God 0.0 are living so much more prosperously, so much more powerfully, and so much more democratically than God 3.0. Well, how can that be if we have the most perfect operating system? How can these other people be doing so manifestly better than we are in the world? And that produces two things, a real rage and a deep sense of humiliation. And I am a huge believer that humiliation is what is behind all of this. Humiliation is the single most underestimated force in international relations. People don't blow up World Trade Centers for money. They don't blow them up because of poverty. They blow them up because, as Ali Salem, the Egyptian playwright, I think put it more accurately than anyone else after 9/11, these young men felt like